This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
This has been a, the most difficult month for coalition soldiers in Iraq since major combat operations ended May 1st of last year. It would seem that the enemies of freedom are taking a final stand before sovereignty is scheduled to pass to the Iraqis on June 30th.
Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld speaking at a Defense Department briefing on Tuesday. Dan Shore joins us now to talk about the week's news, our senior news analyst. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Scott.
It is just over 9 weeks from the date in which sovereignty is scheduled to be handed over to an Iraqi government not yet named or constituted. There are more reported attacks this morning, which have resulted in the deaths of U.S. servicemen and Iraqis. How do the continuing attacks, a suicide bombing this morning outside Tikrit, the insurgency affect the work that has to be done between then and now?
I'll tell you, Scott, April is a month where already more than 100 Americans have been killed, and the month isn't over yet, as you notice. Mm-hmm. How do you turn over a country torn by violence? How do you impose peace in these next 9 weeks? Already, the Deputy Secretary of Defense, Paul Wolfowitz, is saying that June 30th is not a magical date. Gee, we thought it was.
As we noted, the government to which authority is going to be handed off hasn't been named by UN or, for that matter, U.S. officials. There were reports, in fact, that appearing this morning in several newspapers that some of the Iraqis that U.S. officials were dealing with and had hoped to pass off authority are now out of that particular mix.
Right.
It was also reported this week that the new Iraqi government, whatever it is, will not have authority over its military, which raises the question, what do we mean by sovereignty?
Well, what kind of a government is it that doesn't control its own armed forces? What kind of a government is it that doesn't decide who is in the government? As you've noted, the United States has now apparently decided to junk some of the leading politicians in the post-war period, including Ahmed Chalabi, who was the Pentagon's favorite. The formation of an Iraqi government, at least on the civilian side, has apparently been outsourced to Lakhdar Ibrahim, the United Nations representative, and now Paul Bremer, who is the American representative, has decided to allow some of the Ba'ath Party apparatchiks back into the government, and there goes the Ba'athification.
Mm-hmm. De-Ba'athification, I imagine. And perhaps we didn't make clear, of course, an interim government is supposed to schedule elections.
January. So there'll be a period from June 30th, if the June 30th date sticks, until January, where we're not really quite clear that they have sovereignty, but who is it who has sovereignty?
Spain, the new Spanish prime minister, repeated this week, our troops are coming out as soon as that can be facilitated. A number of other countries with troops there have indicated that they would like to get their troops out at the first opportunity. How does that affect the disposition of U.S. and other forces in Iraq?
Well, when you get tiny Honduran forces or Nicaraguan contingents, it doesn't mean much except in somewhat symbolic terms. But there is Poland with 2,400 troops and leading a patched-together division, and Poland can be a problem since Premier Leszek Miller has said that he was misled into the war and is not clear yet on whether he's going to pull out Polish troops. That would be more serious.
I want to ask you about Bob Woodward's book. I know you've been going through it. Washington Post, in fact, reports this morning that the White House is recommending the book. What have you noticed about some of the leading personalities in Mr. Woodward's book?
Well, starting with the president, I think that President Bush comes off looking more decisive, more determined than was generally thought, at least by me. I think that he may have been influenced by some of the people who were closest to him, especially Vice President Dick Cheney, and significantly not including Secretary of State Colin Powell. But whatever the source of the president's Iraq fixation, the Woodward book simply leaves no doubt that the things like the slam dunk information he wanted from the CIA was to support a decision he basically had made and not to help him reach a decision.
Now, Mr. Woodward quotes George Tenet, the CIA director in the book. I guess President Bush, he's CIA director in real life, but he...
That's right. He says, first he gets some information from the CIA. He says, is that all you got? And so a very nervous Mr. Tenet says, don't worry, Mr. President, we'll give you a slam dunk. We'll give you what you need.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the exact quote was, it's a slam dunk, sir.
Right.
Let me ask about Prime Minister President Sharon, forgive me. Prime Minister Sharon in Israel has said that he now feels free to go after Yasser Arafat.
Yes.
The White House issued a statement yesterday saying, quote, we have made it entirely clear to the Israeli government that we would oppose any such action. Now, of course, Prime Minister Sharon plans to withdraw Israeli troops from the Gaza Strip and four West Bank settlements. What do you make both of what he said in the interview and the White House denial?
I don't know exactly what Sharon thinks he is achieving by saying that it is open to him to assassinate Yasser Arafat, although he doesn't indicate that's going to happen pretty soon. That was the one pledge that he made to President Bush in return for very strong support from the president. And the idea of his going back on that pledge, he really promised President Bush that they would not assassinate Yasser Arafat. So I frankly do not know what is in Sharon's mind in coming up with his gratuitous statement.
Mm-hmm. Could he be trying to shore up support in the right wing of his own party?
I suppose that. But if he has to break his agreements with the United States to get agreement from his own people, he is in terrible trouble.
This week, U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments about what access the men being held at the Guantanamo Bay Detention Center should have to the courts. And a Virginia appeals court ruled that Zacharias Moussaoui, only person who's been indicted for the September 11th attacks, can be tried in a civilian courtroom and will be allowed more access to documents. His defense team will be allowed that. What do you make of these twin developments?
Well, let me say it's another illustration of the tension that exists between the war and the law. Yes, the Court of Appeals insists that Moussaoui should have access to three al-Qaeda prisoners who might be able to exonerate him. In what form you get that testimony is still open. Moussaoui has some fame, as you noted, as the country's only 9/11 defendant so far. Then there are the people who have been held in Guantanamo arguing their case about why they shouldn't have lawyers, why they can't appeal what they're doing in the first place. Seems evident that when this war is over, the thing we call the Constitutional Bill of Rights will look a little different than it has looked.
Let me ask you about this finally this week, Dan. A second editor has resigned at USA Today as a result of persistent, perhaps a decade, fabrications by reporter Jack Kelly that appeared in the newspaper and were widely celebrated. This, of course, follows Jason Blair at the New York Times, Stephen Glass at the New Republic. What are your feelings for the profession right now? Is it at the point of a crisis?
Well, maybe I'm guilty of ageism, but it strikes me that half a century of television and now the Internet have bred a generation of journalists not quite sure what reality is, and knowing that the road to fame for them and awards lies in action-packed drama and stories, if necessary, that you make up. Notice that you find that the plagiarists and the inventors are mainly among the young, although otherwise talented journalists. This is a self-serving statement.
All right. Thanks very much. Talk to you next week.
Okay.
NPR Senior News Analyst Daniel Shore.